listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. Dave is off this week, but I have a really exciting guest. So this is a secret that I've probably not told many people. Now I'm going to tell a couple hundred people or a couple thousand people maybe. But I have on the show this week someone who I have kind of like an entrepreneur man crush on. Dave Nevote from Hubstaff is our guest this week. And Dave is someone I really look up to because he is a very analytical and data-driven person. And I think has steered his business really in a great direction. And we're going to get into some of the numbers a little bit later. But I think as we're all kind of growing our businesses and looking for real concrete reasons for doing different things, we look to people like Dave and what Hubstaff has done and grown in a really smart way as a good example that can be set for us. So, Dave, how you doing?
Good, man. Thank you. That's quite the intro.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I mean, I think, Dave Rodenbaugh and I talk a lot about on this show about kind of as we, I'll say, grow up in our business lives, that a lot of things change with us. And I look at what we're doing with our podcast hosting platform. We launched about 5 months ago, and already I see that we're kind of growing up, if you will, in how I manage the business and things like that. So I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. But for the folks who don't know you and don't know Hubstaff, you want to give kind of a little background on who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I've been 38. Just from 38, I've been in online entrepreneurship stuff ever since 2002 timeframe. So long time ago.
Yep.
Right out of college for me. And went through an e-commerce period, then I had a SEO SaaS-based company and started Hubstaff about 5 years ago, 5, 6 years ago. Started focusing there more and more, and now I'm completely on Hubstaff. And Hubstaff's gone through some evolutions as well, but you know what it is basically time tracking, a SaaS-based time tracking platform, mainly for remote teams currently. It has some proof of work things like screenshots in there, but we really focus on the time tracking aspect and helping our clients, which are mostly service-based clients, understand better and automate the processes for which they, pay their employees, making sure that's accurate, and then also how they invoice their clients and making sure that's accurate, and then making it all kind of automated.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys, to kind of give a little bit of bigger picture on the business, you guys are an entirely remote team, right?
Yes, we are.
And how many people on the team kind of part-time and full-time these days?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, probably 40.
Okay,
know?
Yeah.
We're like, it's growing a little bit, but, we have a lot of contractors we use, maybe I'd say 30, working for us almost 100%, and then, another 10 that we use when we need.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So 30 people is a lot. You have a partner in the business, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so 30 people is a lot to manage full time. What does that look like kind of on a, I'll say, weekly or day-to-day basis for you? Jared, right, is your partner?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What does that look like for you guys?
So he does the tech side. He does the development side of the business, the product side. And so he's got a little more. I think he's got around 18. And I run the marketing and support side. And I've got, probably 8 on support now and 6 on marketing.
Okay. Okay. Use your own tools, obviously, to manage a lot of this. But
yeah.
What kind of approaches or tools do you take to managing such a large group, even for
two
of you guys? Yeah.
Yeah. So what we do sprints. It's basically week long sprints, and I've found that to work really well. The support team, I look at a lot of metrics instead of that. The support team, you've got to look at more spot checking of the answers, satisfaction surveys for the agents, And then, you know, I very much focus on response time, and, you know, our response time is like 10 minutes. We've got 24/7, you know, support. We've got a team in the U.S. We've got a team in the Philippines, you know, kind of all handpicked. So we are remote. It's not like we've got, you know, five people we brought on at once. They're kind of brought on over a timely basis. I mean, I look at those kind of general indicators for support, and just more than anything, just the ability for somebody to get good answers to people. And then on the marketing side, so all that's a long way of saying we don't really have sprints on the support side. On the marketing side, we have sprints, and the way that works is that up to this point, I have been really defining what needs to be done for each of the people on the team. I said I have like six people. The way that's organized is I've got somebody doing social, I've got somebody doing SEO, I've got somebody doing content, I've got somebody doing, you know, front end, you know, design work, not design work only, but also the code with it. Mm-hmm. And then I've got somebody doing, you know, integration type stuff. I've got somebody doing conversion. So all those pieces kind of fit together, and I say this week what needs to be done for, you know, this channel.
For each of those things, yeah.
Yeah, so each of those things has, say, five things going on per week. Usually it's about five, six projects per week. And I just work to push things forward. Our weeks go from Thursday to – or Friday is the start day to – Thursday is the end day. So by the end of Thursday, they've got to have a short summary about where they are for that week in terms of that sprint. A project, when I said there's five, six things going on, that's a multi-week, sometimes multi-month project. And then I just break it down for the task that week. So that's not like I've got to be dragging around a bunch of stuff. We use Kanban. It's not like I'm going to drag around stuff in creating new projects. It's just, you know, what needs to be done this week in a checkbox. Did they get it done? Yes or no. They're going to report on that by the end of Thursday. And then I take that usually on Fridays. Is the majority of my day is basically going through and looking at what they reported and then giving feedback and making up the next week's sprint.
Yeah. No, I love that. So that's really different. We use just sort of a typical weekly, kind of small sprint, and then we have monthly, you know, projects, yeah, or goals or whatever you want to call it. But we, like a lot of people in the world, I think, start on Monday, and it's kind of tough. I mean, I can imagine, like, psychologically for you and your team, it's great to like end on Thursday, have Friday to regroup a little bit, and then really have like a really hard 4 days the next week leading up until the end of Thursday.
Yeah. Well, and they typically you have some rollover. They don't always hit what they're doing.
Sure,
and so
yeah,
that Friday, there's time for them to I try to do it more on a rolling basis. So what that means is that if somebody gets done with their task on Tuesday, I tell them to report it ASAP, not to wait around until Thursday to report it. So they report that one. Then I knock that one off I manage that one to the next week's sprint before. So my whole day is on Friday isn't doing that. And there are rollover items. So basically that time on Friday is being used for them to catch up and kind of finish that item. But then I switched it over, actually. I used to do, you know, starts on Monday as well. But what I realized is that people
hate Monday. Like, they don't want to, yeah, come back from vacation. They're like, fuck, it's Monday.
It makes me hate Monday too.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. So I use Friday as more of a relaxed day to set the week up. And then also people leave and they forget to enter their sprints, their summaries. And then I'm stuck all weekend long, not like having anything to go on. And then it bleeds into Monday, and I just found that, you know, Thursday is great because usually people are around, and it's not like it's it flows better for me. Plus, there's more time for me. I'm not stuck during all weekend long setting these sprints.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You can relate. We have so we use Slack like everyone, I think, and we have this like Slack bot 5 o'clock on Friday pops up and I have like a beer in my hand and it's like, hey, enter your sprint stuff for this week in the stand-up channel. I'm like, fuck, I'm done. Like, I'm done already. Like, don't even, cool. So that's great. And so I'm sure Jared does a lot of the same kind of stuff on the development and product side of things, right?
Yep.
You guys are using Trello, like several giant Trello boards for this or what?
We're about ready to release our own PM system. So yes, similar to it's Kanban, but it's our own internal tool.
Cool. I think I know the story behind this a little bit. So that'll be really interesting to see how that rolls out. I think that's a cool product to fit in with what else you guys are doing up stuff. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So taking like two steps back a little bit about growing to 30 relatively full-time people. What did that look like in terms of kind of balancing like this ever-present need I think there is for like growth and more people and more support, more development, manpower with cash flow, right? So like it's always you need more than you have money for, I feel like, at least us. I mean, right now we're very young, but I can't see a time when this won't be the case. How have you guys managed that?
We had income coming from other sources.
Okay.
That's the main way we managed it because basically we didn't want to take on funding. Still I'm not looking to take on funding. And so you can only do what you can do. We basically poured everything into the company and we were willing to not make anything personally for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, outside of our other income. And then basically that enabled us to hire on when we had more money, more or less.
Sure.
And from that point, you know, so that's it. If I had to do it over, I mean, if I had to give advice on it, I would say that, you know, if you think you're onto something, you're getting customers, then getting money's not a bad thing. But you don't look at it in the traditional sense of like, you know, oh, I'm going to go get funding from so-and-so. You know, here in Indianapolis, you know, we have, you know, there's angel investors. That's the way to go initially, I believe, because it just, you know, you don't need that much money to start off with, and they're not going to give you that much money, but it's like you don't want to get caught up in spending your time. It's less time mm-hmm. to raise money that way. And, you know, the money can help you do the things you want to do because you do have to have a fully baked product in order to sell. You know, that's the problem. That's the catch 22 is that people are going to come back and say, well, your product's not it's worse than the competitors or it's not. You know, it's not full or it's not, didn't have this feature, but also you shouldn't get caught up in the trap of saying like Hubstaff still doesn't have every feature that people request. And there's certain things that we're just not going to do. For instance, like building in a full payroll system for taxes. Like so we have some people that say, oh, it's a, you know, the word they usually use is a non-starter, right. Or something right. like that, you know? And it's like, okay, well then
it's like a whole other company, you know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, then you know it's a non-starter. So whatever, but I mean that's one of the things. So you know, bottom line, we grew slow. When we had money, we spent it within the company, and we've been lucky to you know now get to a point where we can take some personally as well.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned 3 years. How long was it actually before you guys were able to kind of draw a normal salary?
Yeah. I mean.
I think this
years.
Is something that people years, underestimate yeah. a lot, myself included. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about 3 years. I mean, you know, I always knew and felt that it would be worth it. And the thing with software specifically, the thing that's really nice about software is that the majority of your costs are labor. So you've got to always have in the back of your mind, okay, if we get to a point where we realize we're not growing anymore, whatever the case may be, you know, it's like, you make adjustments at that point in time to do what you have to do, you know, and even things out, meaning, okay, we're not going to hire anymore until we get to, we're just not going to hire anymore, or we're going to do whatever you got to do, right, to make mm-hmm. the numbers work.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the beauty of software is that it's unlike some other kind of businesses where I'll give you an example, you know, shipping basketballs right? Drop shipping basketballs, for instance, a majority of your revenue in that business is going to be tied up in your product and shipping, and you're not going to have much wiggle room to say, well, if I, worst case scenario, you know, if I realize I'm not growing anymore, I can't just stop investing in the product.
Right.
See what I'm saying? Because
right.
you can't, yeah. the product is how you're going to make sales. So, you know, with the software business, what's interesting is we can say at any point in time, okay, let's hold steady here for a little bit and let's catch up.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I think that we're definitely seeing that. I mean, like I said, we're very young at this point. But kind of already seeing like pretty predictable numbers, like 5 months in, like revenue is this and it's growing by that. And our fixed cost for hosting, which is our biggest kind of fixed cost, is this. So we can spend whatever the rest on development. Cause similarly, we're trying to operate kind of profit neutral right now because I have other money coming in from Podcast Motor. So our hosting platform is able to be kind of profit neutral. I am wanting to start to pull some revenue out of it, or some profit, I should say. So I think it's a healthy practice to get into. I've been preaching the profit first mentality.
Yeah.
Have you read the book?
No, I've not. But
okay.
I mean, it makes – that's why we didn't get funding, because we wanted to be able to make our own decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a big reason why, at least.
Yeah, so Mike – I'll butcher his last name. It's basically Dave Ramsey for all you Southern folks for your business. Like, okay, this is how much money you have. Take your money first and go spend for bills or whatever else after you've taken your money. And I think it's just a really healthy way to look at it, even if you decide – I'm only going to make $100 this month. That's my $100, and the business can have everything else, but not the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good. That is a good. Because I'll tell you too, where that comes in very, very nicely is, you know, when you go to sell one of these things, you need to have the track record of profit.
Yeah.
Or else it's not worth nearly as much.
Yeah.
So if you are spending everything, they're not. The person that's coming to look to buy it is not going to care when you tell them that where you spent it necessarily. They're just going to look at that. Okay, it's zero profit.
Right.
Versus if you have a bunch of profit built in there, they're going to look at that and say, "All right, like that makes sense." Because it does matter a lot, especially when it comes to the sale.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Speaking mostly in terms of, you know, like. Small type sale where you're selling to another, you know, individual buyer.
Sure, sure. Not some crazy startup. I hear you.
Right.
Cool. So you guys are part of the Open Barometrics, I'd say program, where like Open Metrics that Barometrics started, I know, kind of out of necessity. Josh needed a way to kind of show off what Barometrics did. So he opened up his dashboard. And I don't know, a couple dozen other companies now are a part of it. How is the evolution of that been for you guys?
Great. I mean, we don't really, it's, you know, it's, I think it gets us more, I don't think there's been any negatives from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I think that, I think the argument against it definitely is like it invites competition and tells people kind of how good you're doing. I think the other side of that is, none of this is really rocket science, right? It's time tracking or it's podcast hosting or it's email sending or whatever it is. And the execution really determines the proverbial kind of winners and losers, right? So there's a lot of other people that do time tracking. Some of them probably financially are doing better than you guys, but a lot are probably doing worse. So it's not the fact that you have a time tracking tool. It's how you run your business that kind of ends up being the secret sauce, right?
Yeah. I mean, it obviously – you got somebody really smart sitting there and looking at this and trying to say, what do I want to get into? And that person can take cues from, you know, these things as a whole. And he can say, well, here's this one, which, you know, our growth rate is like whatever, 6%. But then here's, you know, ConvertKit growing at 25% or whatever they do. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so he can take that and say, well, I'd rather have an email marketing solution than I would time tracking because I think, you know what I'm saying? So anyway, it's positive and negative.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Cool. So getting into some of the really nerdy stuff of we talked a little about how you guys run your sprints and how you hire. But in terms of like looking at the business as a whole and you sit back on your Friday afternoons and say, OK, this was a good week or a bad week, or it's a good month or a bad month. I'm looking at your Barometrics dashboard right now. Yeah. A lot of them are green, which I know is good for Barometrics. But what do you guys look at? I mean, like I know like KPIs is the term, and the North Star metric, like the one thing that if you look at your business, say, yep, that's good or that's bad. Our business is doing good or not. What do you guys look at in terms of the health of the business?
I look at I've got a whole big spreadsheet, but I look primarily at the number of trials that were started during that period of time. And that tells me whether the leading indicator is good or bad. I've got to assume that almost all the trials that come in the door are relatively the same, you know, unless we have a lot of, you know, one person teams coming in all of a sudden, or, you know, 30 person teams all of a sudden from certain sources. But really that kind of evens out over time. And I say that just because in our, you know, the way we charge, a one person team is worth $9, a 30-person team is worth whatever it is, you know, $300 a month, something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I look at the number of trials that are started during that period of time, because that really tells me if what we're doing on the front end is working or not. And we are built almost exclusively on inbound marketing, so no outbound sales teams or anything like that. It's just all inbound marketing. And, you know, so it's hard to understand how that's all performing in real time. So, you know, that trial numbers is good for me to look at. And then, you know, on the back end, there's also, we look at the number of customers we're getting, and we look at that very closely. So we know on a Monday we should be getting X number of customers, on a Tuesday, you know, and kind of how we're comparing up and down. We can tell, you know, hey, we're having a good Monday or a bad Monday, that kind of thing.
And you look at your metrics daily, or how often do you really take a look at it?
Twice an hour.
Really?
Sorry, once every 2 hours. Sorry.
Oh, really?
2 hours. Yeah. I mean, I look at it all the time.
Okay.
I look at it in real time to know how to have a pulse. I look at the number of trials started once a day because I get notifications, but then I look at the number of customers we're getting, and I look at that all the time. Because you know, for me, it's kind of like email. It's like, how many customers have we gotten today? And you can really get a good pulse of what's going on. We have A/B testing going on, so I'm really interested to see if it's up or down.
Gotcha.
You know, that kind of thing. So I look at that a lot.
Gotcha. Interesting. I always felt like, you know, like the person always clicking refresh before the concert tickets go on sale or something like that, like waiting to get that special email. When I check my metrics dashboard, I check it every morning, and I feel like that's a lot. What do you do with that every other hour? Is that just kind of keeping your finger on the pulse, or do you take action? I guess with your split test, you cut a split test off if it's really doing bad and has a noticeable difference, or?
Yeah, that's the big thing. You know, it's kind of like, just how is it, how are your tests performing on the, because most of the tests that we have going on, you know, most of the tests that we have going on that are really meaningful are currently having to do with onboarding and turning people into customers from their trials within the application. So that's why I'm looking at that number so hard, because it's like, you know, number one, I've got it right on my mobile. So it's like I said, it's like getting a text. But number two, you know, it just tells me how that test is doing.
Gotcha.
And so that's what's really important to me. And then also just having a pulse. I mean, we do a lot of what I do too is not so much metrics related, but it's more feedback. You know, I do a lot of, one of my jobs still within the company is to, you know, I've got an email that goes out basically asking people, you know, what they're looking for within Hubstaff, and how, if they're finding what they're looking for, basically. And I get replies back to that. I probably get 20 a day. And, so it's a it's a good performer to me. That means that it's the email, you know, the email is working. And basically I get a lot of qualitative information, like, you know, just kind of like that gives me a pulse for what's going on in within the new trials that sign up. You know, I don't track it anywhere. I don't like have a database that I'm not copying and pasting all the answers. I have a keyword database that I can search and this kind of thing. But it's just not, you know, if I get a new request in, I will forward it over to my support team member. I have him log it. And then basically it's kind of like a vote for that feature. Yep. And that's how we drive what we build. So, or that's a big part of it, at least. The support team does the same thing as what I'm discussing, is what I'm kind of discussing right now. But sometimes people will reply back to that founder email versus doing a aggressive email to the support team.
Sure, sure. Yeah. No, I think that the message from the founder really opens the door a lot to dialogue. We've seen that kind of on both of my businesses. Yeah, I think it's a great way to start the conversation, and you never know what you're going to hear. It's the craziest stuff that comes out, and it's great. I think it's a lot of times the things we don't expect are the real pain points for our customers, because like we think we know, right, what they want, but in reality, it's oftentimes pretty different.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys use Intercom, I know, for at least part of your support. What other so is that where kind of all of your customer communication goes?
That's where all the support goes. Yep.
Okay.
That's where all, and we've found that it works really well.
Yeah. No, I'm loving it.
I mean, you can have, yeah. I mean, you can get a lot more complex solutions with tickets and all these different things, but Intercom has done everything we needed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just, we're a few weeks into it at this point, and I can just see the engagement with our customers and potential customers has gone up so much. I mean, I think the downside, if you have to argue it's a downside, is just the volume of interaction you have with your customers is higher. Somebody's got to man that thing more often than you have to do email. But I think the upside is we're definitely selling with it. So I look at it as an asset for the business and for our growth. And so maybe it's like kind of neutral right now because we're definitely spending more money on support and manpower to be in front of the customers, but we're getting more customers because of it. So that's cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that probably always pays off in the end.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's definitely something you can scale with. Cool. So I guess talking out of your direct purview a little bit, but in terms of guiding the product, you guys are a big business with tens of thousands of customers. Talking about product feedback and road mapping, how do you guys approach that from like an analytical perspective? Because at this point, I know the tool is very complex, and like I said, a ton of users, and I'm sure a gajillion feature requests. What does that look like kind of on a big scale for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's really not a lot different. I mean, the thing is that it gets easier to understand what to build because you do have a more full-featured suite of products. You know, so it's not like people are asking for everything. They're asking for the kind of the, like right now it's like vacation time and like they're asking you to go a little further with the features you have, but you can see how that's tied into kind of what you do already, you know? So it's like, okay, that makes sense. You know, you don't want to give people, you're looking for trends in terms of what people say are like what are the things that are holding them back. Like if you only had this one thing, you know, you'd have everything I need. And then I get like three of those things and I'm like, you know, that's something that's hot for me. Yeah. But like right now, we're building out tasks. We don't even have native tasks in our solution right now. So that's going to be a really big one because it's like you look at your product and you try to figure out what are the big things I can do? Like not the small things. What are the really, really big things that need to be done? You know, of course, there's always going to be small things, but what are the really big things that would change the usability of the product when somebody's coming in the door and then how they use it, you know, going forward? And we do a lot of surveys to understand that as well. Like just an example is like in our invoicing system, you do a survey that's like, okay, how important is it to be able to do X, and then meaning how important it is to be able to look at your invoice as a draft? How important is it to be able to send your invoice to a client? How important is it to be able to calculate your hours, the amounts owed automatically based on your pay rate? How important is it to collect a payment from the invoice? You know, and it's like, I thought going into it that, hey, collecting a payment was very important. Like 10% mm-hmm. people said it was yes. And that's something that would have taken months to build and thousands of dollars to build. And it would derail other things. We'd be putting that in. It's like people don't even want it. So we're just, you know, so that survey is really important. Once you do figure out kind of the trend, then you figure out, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then you do a survey to figure out the fine details. And then you're going to have a very good idea about how to move forward.
Gotcha. So we talked, Dave Rodenbein and I talked about expansion MRR a little bit in our last episode. As a mature tool and business, do you guys look at building things that get you more customers in the door or allow your existing customers to, term is to be more successful with your business, right? For them to pay you more money. At this point for you guys, which is more important?
The most important for us is retention.
Okay.
So getting – not necessarily either one of those things, not necessarily getting them to pay us more dollars based on the features that they have or – and not even really building something so that we can go get a new customer or getting people in the door. But really for us is building the best product to get them to stick, to figure out what it's going to take to be – a solution that they are going to stick with, and I just say that because, the first one, if you're going after getting people in the door, you're going to have such a wide and broad product, and we don't really, that's hard to manage, and it ends up, I think, hurting you in other areas. It's like if Microsoft would have put spreadsheets and Word together in the same product, you know what I'm saying? You got to know when to cut it. And then, if we looked at just getting them to pay us more money, like for us, at least for us, for you guys, it might be different, but for us, it's just based on the number of people they have in the organization. And so it's like, I can't talk somebody into hiring somebody. Mm-hmm. All I got to do is be there for them and let them to enable them to use the product as well as possible with the people they do have and hope they stay in business as long as possible, and help them. Hope that my product is helping them do that. Really, mm-hmm. That's all. But so that's all I'm saying. That's why the answer I answered that way.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that's something we're definitely struggling with, is how to build a product that allows for this kind of expansion MRR. I don't think that, probably similarly to you guys, I don't think that our business model and the business that we're in allows for it very well. So the answer for us is retention. And as a hosting provider, retention should be strong because people don't want their stuff to go away, right? So I think that for us, at least right now, it's getting a suite of tools and a kind of a portfolio to allow our customers to stay around as long as possible and get the most use out of our tool. And then getting more customers – at least right now, it doesn't seem to be that hard. So it's cool. We have a lot of work to do for sure, but early on, at least, been pretty happy with how things are going.
I would say look at yours. I mean, it's always about the front end, really. I mean, I'd look at yours and say, that would be about the volume then. If you can, if getting more customers is not that hard, that's always a good sign. So, for us, it hasn't been either. And, people are searching, people are searching for the tools that we have, and we're just trying to get our product in front of more eyeballs, but at this point we kind of were satisfied with the number we're getting in, and we're really focused on, like I said in the beginning, kind of converting them a higher rate from trial to paid. because that's where the biggest impact is for us currently.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And I would imagine that's something that's changed over time.
Our conversion rate
hasn't always been the limiting factor in growth.
Yeah. I guess that's correct. Or either that or more importantly, it's like 15%. You can say that's pretty high for a SaaS based business from trial to paid. But at the same time, I don't know. I just feel like we could do better. I feel like there's those things on the onboarding that make people think the product is more complex than it is, or you know, it's hard to invite your team into the product, things like that. You know, trying to really identify what the things are that they have to do in order for them to become fully engaged in the product, and then trying to maximize the use of those things, basically.
Gotcha. You know, as someone who just went through the Intercom onboarding process, I know you guys have probably been using it for years, but it might be worth signing up a new account just to see how well they guide you, because it's a really complex product to set up.
Yes.
They do an exceptional, not surprisingly, they do an exceptional job at onboarding within the app. So if you guys are looking for some creative ideas, that might be a place to go. They do an exceptionally good job.
That's where we're at. That's where I'm at in the company right now. I'm really thinking about the onboarding of our users.
Yeah. Cool. I know you touched on this briefly, but you guys have like an entirely inbound marketing process and approach. At this point, you have a ton of content out there and a ton of really great content. But over the last couple of years, has the market for content changed, and how you guys approach content marketing? Has it changed a lot for you guys? Just with there being so much out there now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for us, we look at – so for content now, it has changed, I guess. For content now, we're more concerned with that market I told you about earlier, which is, you know, people coming in the door, and now I'm trying to get content to them about – primarily about the product and use cases for where – things they might not be thinking about, things like streamlining their business, that kind of thing. And we're finding that, you know, you come in the door, you're in a different mindset. Now you've started a trial, you're pretty serious about it, and you deserve a different piece of content than just a blog post or whatever. So that's the way it's changed for us, I guess.
Interesting. Yeah, this is something that Brennan Dunn talked about recently, I think, with his project management tool or PlanScope, is that people were coming in looking for how to charge more money, and he was telling them how to kind of run their business or to manage their projects, and they were like, what the fuck is this all about? So yeah, I think targeting people with the right message at the right time is definitely important. Are you doing that through email now more, or is that kind of dynamic blog content based on?
Yeah, we're doing it through email. We're doing it through email, and then also through primarily through email, but then also through we're looking at developing like a university type area of the site where it would be part of the application itself. And it's kind of like content for trial users, not for trial and customers.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, it's a little different, but
I like it. Cool. Well, just to wrap things up, I guess, what as you look at your business now and look forward a couple of years, what kind of things do you look at and say, that's going to be really exciting to tackle, but I'm not sure quite how to do it?
I'm getting into it right now, which is kind of branding, really becoming a better looking company, you know, on the outside. I think on the inside, we've got great engineering, we've got a great product, we've done a lot on the inside, but now we're trying to wrap it on the outside to match. Kind of growing up from looking like a company that just kind of put together some marketing assets on the outside, and then versus a big multi-million dollar company.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm
sure you guys will do a great job at it. That's yeah, I mean, that's
it's
really great
be an
to
interesting
hear.
Challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, because I mean, I thought at the very beginning of the episode, I talked about how, you know, my business is growing up, you guys are several steps ahead. So it's nice to hear that even businesses that are doing, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars a month have the same kinds of evolutions they go through, even though your scope is very different. So that's,
yeah,
it's encouraging. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So it'll be fun though, because now we have, you know, now I'm looking at it and saying, you know, that's, you know, so I'm doing things like getting t-shirts and, you know, things that we didn't have time to do back, you know, so you're getting t-shirts, you're redoing the logos, you're, you know, and that stuff is just like, man, it's just that stuff you don't do every day. You know what I'm saying? So it's fun.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So, Dave, I really appreciate it, man. Can you tell folks where they can kind of learn more about you and Hubstaff?
Yeah, blog.hubstaff.com is our blog, and you know, I publish a lot of growth articles on there about, you know, kind of our story of how we've grown and what we've done. And my, you know, my email is dave@hubstaff.com, real easy. That's about it.
Awesome. Dave Nevoet, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.